Next case for argument this morning is Cintas Corporation against Perry. Mr. Nogle.
My Honor, Richard Nogle on behalf of Cintas Corporation. This is an appeal of the District Court's grant of summary judgment in favor of Mr. Perry, who was an employee of Cintas Corporation, and the trial court found that the restrictive covenants in the employment agreement were unenforceable and awarded summary judgment in his favor as well as on the award of attorney's fees pursuant to the employment contract.
Yeah, Mr. Noble, I have a problem with appellate jurisdiction, which is to say I don't understand why we have any. There was, as of course your appellate brief covers, a dispute about attorney's fees, and that entails a dispute about the amount of fees. And it's pretty well settled that where there's a dispute about fees, until the amount is quantified, there's no final decision.
Two issues. There are still appellate jurisdiction because we sought damages in the complaint, and we believe that there's still a live controversy as to whether if this action is reversed, we would be entitled to seek damages at trial, as well as the fact that issue of attorney's fees is in play, and the attorney's fees are conditioned upon two things, a finding that there was no violation of the covenants.
Well, you're missing the point, counsel. District Court said, at the time you took the appeal that is now before us here, the District Court had said, I think Perry is entitled to attorney's fees. But he hadn't said how much. And until attorney's fees are quantified, there is no appealable order. Now, the Supreme Court has held that in a case that neither side cites, but it's quite beyond our power to examine. There is just no appealable order. Now, fortuitously for you, the fees have now been quantified, maybe 10 days ago.
Yes.
And you have appealed.
Yes.
But so far as I can tell, your appeal in that case is limited in a way that doesn't bring up the merits. Now, doubly fortuitously for you, it's within 30 days, so you still have time to amend your notice of appeal. So you might actually be able to get this case before us. But I rather suggest that you would want to amend your notice of appeal in what is now 07-12-16 and try to bring up the whole case, because otherwise we're just going to have to dismiss it.
Well, we'd be happy to do that, Your Honor. We still believe, though, that the issue of whether Mr. Perry is entitled to fees was properly...
You can believe that all you want, but unless you think we're going to ignore the Supreme Court, there is no appellate jurisdiction over that question. Nor, for that matter, is there any appellate jurisdiction over the merits of the case until you amend the notice of appeal in 07-12-16. This is just basic federal jurisdictional doctrine, and it's surprising neither side paid any attention to it.
Yeah.
I think you've got my advice about what you need to do. If you amend the notice of appeal, we will ask the parties to file supplemental briefs dealing with any dispute about the amount of the attorney's fees, and we can probably decide 07-12-16 on the basis of the briefs filed in these two appeals. But until that's done, there's really probably nothing before us. But this is your crack at arguing the merits, so go to it.
I would like to proceed on the merits then, Your Honor. The district court erred in finding there was no material factual dispute over whether Mr. Perry violated his covenant with Cintas Corporation, and further, that Mr. Perry did incur the fees. We respectfully request that the grant of summary judgment in Mr. Perry's favor be reversed.
Mr. Nogle, at the summary judgment stage, did you argue to the district court that the non-compete was enforceable on its face and that it had been violated, or did you argue merely that it could be modified so as to be enforceable?
We argued both. We argued that under Ohio law these non-competes are favored, but we also argued in the alternative that the covenant could have been reasonably modified to impose a geographical restriction that could have been reasonably enforced in light of the trial court's findings.
There are no cases, or are there perhaps, that hold that it's an abuse of discretion for a court to refuse to modify a non-compete.
In the Raimondi case, the Ohio Supreme Court found that the trial court should have modified the case, modified the employment agreement. It is a matter of the trial court's discretion. However, the Supreme Court of Ohio has reversed in certain cases where the covenant could be reasonably modified to impose reasonable restrictions, since Ohio law does favor non-competes.
But the answer is that it has not been held to be an abuse of discretion.
Well, even Raimondi, it was. The court said
it was held to be an abuse.
That it should have been modified, yes. The trial court entertained the wrong standard.
By the way, was this suit not filed in Ohio?
It was filed in Illinois.
Yeah, my question is, why was it not filed in Ohio? You have this agreement that provides for Ohio law, and of course your basic argument here is, well, it's true my client wrote an absurd and unenforceable agreement, but in Ohio, you know, judges just rewrite the agreements to give us whatever we could have written had we hired a lawyer before writing it. So why didn't you file your lawsuit in the jurisdiction that supposedly is so favorable?
At the time Mr. Pierre was working in Illinois, we believed he was a resident of Illinois and that the injunction would operate to bar him from activities within the state of Illinois.
It doesn't answer my question. There is no doubt that there was personal jurisdiction to file it in Illinois. I wasn't asking whether there was personal jurisdiction in this suit. I was asking why it wasn't filed in Ohio.
Because we were seeking an injunction for Mr. Perry's activities we believed in
if
Illinois.
If you've got personal jurisdiction over somebody, you can file a lawsuit in Botswana, and the court can say how the man behaves in the rest of the world. That is indeed what these contracts do. These contracts specify how you behave in the rest of the world.
We could have filed in Ohio, but we elected to do so in Illinois because we initially filed in state court seeking a state court injunction of his activities, which we thought of at the time were in Illinois. The district court found that Cintas offered no evidence to refute the earlier findings that Mr. Perry did not retain any confidential information of Cintas at the time. And respectfully, this was the wrong standard to be employed. The evidence on summary judgment should have been evaluated in the light most favorable to Cintas. And furthermore, the evidence was undisputed that Mr. Perry took at least three confidential items with him upon leaving Cintas, the first of which were two computer disks that were found by Mr. Perry in March of 2004. He found them at his home during the pendency of this litigation, and instead of returning them to Cintas, he gave them to his secretary at Aramark and asked his secretary at Aramark to inspect the disks to see if they could be utilized in Aramark's business to create a certain form that Mr. Perry was trying to develop. We only found out about these disks when we received an anonymous phone call during the pendency of the first day of preliminary injunction hearing that this material was sitting on Mr. Perry's desk at Aramark, and that those disks were subsequently returned. They contained Salesforce names, account information, and a variety of other sales productivity reports and customer contracts. It's also undisputed that Mr. Perry suspiciously found a tenured sales productivity report within Aramark's offices, and rather than return that tenured productivity report to Cintas, he again gave that item to his secretary and asked the secretary to inspect that document and use it in connection with Aramark's business. That was also one of the items that the anonymous tipster told us was on Mr. Perry's desk, and that's how we discovered that he was actually retaining and using Cintas' information. And finally, Mr. Perry did produce from his files a national account manager ranking report of all of Cintas' national account representatives, their sales by region throughout the entire country. He said he retained that for bragging purposes. So, Your Honors, at a minimum, there was a factual dispute over whether Mr. Perry retained and used Cintas' confidential information. On the non-compete, the trial court found that it would not enforce the non-compete unless Cintas could prove the evidence that Cintas' legitimate interests are being threatened. And we did so. Ohio courts are favorable to non-competes, and I did cite to the court a recent decision in the Convergys case that says that an actual threat of harm exists when an employee possesses knowledge of an employer's trade secrets or confidential information and begins working for a competitor in a similar product line. It is undisputed that Mr. Perry was working in a similar product line at Aramark in the uniform services industry. So there was an actual threat of harm to Cintas's legitimate business interests because of Mr. Perry's knowledge of pricing information, knowledge of business forecasts, product specifications, customer lists, sales and marketing goals. Mr. Perry was interviewing for his position with Aramark for the period of May through October of 2003. At the time, he was attending confidential Cintas meetings in July and August of 2003, where he learned all of Cintas's current national business plans. So it was inevitable under the Convergys case and the Stoneham case that Mr. Perry would use this confidential information for the benefit of Aramark. He knew of no other way. Cintas trained him in the uniform business, where he worked for 10 years. And he was hired by Aramark to train and develop Cintas's sales force in the Western, Aramark's sales force in the Western United States. So the only thing that Mr. Perry could have done for Aramark was to train Aramark's sales force in what he knew about Cintas. And the attorney's fees issue, I know that we will be modifying our brief. However, I did want to argue that the agreement clearly required a condition precedent to Mr. Perry being awarded his fees, and that was that there would be no violation of the agreement, and secondly, that he would be awarded his fees only if he incurred those fees. And it is undisputed that Aramark contractually agreed to pay those fees. The bills went to Aramark. Aramark paid the bills.
Well, is there a live dispute in this case? My understanding of Ohio law is that when a judge rewrites the agreement, the rewrite applies only prospectively. And that means that there are no damages for what happened before the rewrite. And as this agreement had a 2-year limit in it, and it seems to have run, what relief could be given? No relief based on the rewrite, and the rewrite itself looks like it wouldn't apply because 2 years have run. So what is left that the parties are disputing here?
Whether Cintas incurred any damages as a result of Mr.
There can't be damages because the rewrite runs prospectively, right? You concede, as I read it, that the agreement as written is unenforceable. It has to be rewritten to be enforceable. And if the rewrite runs only prospectively, there cannot be damages. That's just what it means to say it's prospective. So what's still at issue here?
I believe the rewrite would run from the time the trial court should have granted the relief at the time.
In Ohio says that that's the date, as opposed to the time when it's actually rewritten.
I'm not aware of Ohio authority either way that says it's prospective or retroactive. So we would respectfully request that the award of attorney's fees and the finding of summary judgment be reversed and that this case be remanded to the trial court. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. DiNardo.
Good morning. May it please the court. The Raimondi case in Ohio was the case that changed the rule from allowing courts only to blue pencil offending clauses. So the option was if there's an offending clause, you can excise it, but you couldn't otherwise.
Let me start with the question where we just were, because it's a question about whether we've got a case or controversy. Is there any authority in Ohio for the proposition that Mr. Noble just said that the retroactivity date for this rewrite is when the trial court should have rewritten rather than when it actually does?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. There is authority in Ohio that indicates the case is moot if the court was correct that the unwritten agreement was unenforceable. There's been that concession, and we cite those cases in our brief. But in terms of a finding that the trial court erred in not rewriting, and you go back to the date of that error, I don't know that there is such a case, Your Honor.
But apart from the non-compete claim, there's a claim for violation of the non-disclosure provisions in the contract, and that's still alive, apparently?
Yes, Your Honor. There are claims of violation of both the both the non-disclosure of confidential information or trade secret information, as well as the solicitation of customers and solicitation of employees. The district court had before it a fairly classic summary judgment motion on those points. There were statements of undisputed material facts submitted. The evidence was examined. The district court found that in the case of the non-disclosure, the evidence, there were three or four minor items claimed by Cintas, the two old computer disks that were found to contain 10-year-old data of no commercial value and were not used for the content in any event, but to attempt to replicate an Excel spreadsheet formula, that did not constitute a violation of the confidentiality provision. There was a hard copy of a document on one of those two disks. The court found that that did not violate the confidentiality provision because the information was simply not of a nature, of a confidential or trade secret nature. And then there was a third item. If you count the two disks as one item, there was a third item, a listing of the performance rankings of the national account managers, one of which was Mr. Perry. He kept a copy of that. The evidence there was he never disclosed it. It showed that he was the highest among 14. He kept it, but there was no disclosure, and that was the uncontroverted evidence. So on summary judgment, the court simply found that there's not a sufficient material fact dispute to justify an adverse finding.
But at least some of that, surely, could a jury might infer that some of that is arguably confidential, that those documents are arguably or contain arguably confidential information that could be used for some purposes in the workplace.
Well, again, on the computer disks, Your Honor, this was 10-year-old data that was, I think the court correctly concluded, useless. Mr. Perry was now in an entirely different job. When he was with Cintas, he was selling and negotiating contracts. That was his job, national contracts with companies that had their headquarters in Illinois or Indiana. When he went to Aramark, he had a different position. He was no longer selling. He was training, if you will, and developing salespeople to sell local business. So the fact that the jobs were dramatically different, the fact that the information was so dated, and in terms of the one document, the fact that there had been no disclosure, I think the district court correctly concluded that no reasonable jury could conclude there had been a violation.
Well,
here,
there had been no disclosure up to that point, but here he is secreting it in his desk drawer. Don't you find that the least bit problematic?
Well, as to the secreting in the desk drawer, the court found, and the evidence was uncontroverted, that upon discovery, these materials were turned back to Cintas and not retained. They did attempt to use the format, not the content, of the document that was found in the drawer because they could not figure out an Excel spreadsheet formula where you took column A, added it to column B, it gave you column C. He gave this document. He said, this is the type of thing I want to do for our salespeople.
Yes, but the whole thing, does it leave you with a sanguine feeling? Aren't there like little kind of niggling thoughts? What is this guy doing with this stuff? And just because something is 10 years old doesn't mean, the Coca-Cola recipe is what, 110 years old? And oh boy, if that was in someone's desk drawer.
Especially since we now have a brand new conviction for attempting to sell that to Pepsi.
Well, I think the court was also influenced by the uncontroverted evidence, Your Honor, that the Mr. Perry put himself at risk of loss of his job with Aramark if he used any really confidential information of Cintas. He signed an agreement that said if he called upon...
Does Aramark not fire somebody who proclaims, I'm doing my best not to honor my agreements with my employers, followed by somebody who concedes that he tried to get away with discovery violations, not continue holding on to stuff even after being ordered to turn it over? Your client has basically stood up and said, I am completely untrustworthy.
Well, as I understand the record, he signed a document that said, if I use information I had, I can be discharged and should be discharged by Aramark. He discovers this document, and this is uncontroverted. He discovers it when he gets to the West Coast. It's turned over in discovery. No copies are retained.
Why wasn't it turned over before discovery, before all of this?
He did not find it, Your Honor, until he moved from Chicago to the West Coast, found it in an Aramark office in the West Coast, found it, gave it. Now, he did give it to his secretary and say, use the format.
Well, yeah.
He did do that.
Yeah.
The evidence is also that that Cintas did not consider the formatting of the document to be confidential. And that's the testimony from Mr. Perry's former boss at Cintas. He said, no, it's not the format that we believe is confidential.
Could I turn you just for a minute to the amount of the fees? I am very interested in the amount of the fees, over $300,000. Would you say that that's the norm for a case like this one? I read Judge Bucklow's findings, but would you say that's the norm? Because,
Again, I wasn't involved
at that. It's like 2 years of our salary.
I wasn't involved in that level at that stage of litigation, but I would say this. There was some expedited discovery. There was a three-day hearing, Your Honor, and then there was some additional discovery. There was a great deal of briefing. Judge Bucklow found that the amounts, and again, I wasn't involved in any of those proceedings, found that they were reasonable. There were a gaggle of lawyers involved on three sides of this, because not only did you have Cintas and Perry, you also had Aramark lawyers. So it didn't strike me as beyond the realm, the number. I guess that was my reaction to that. In terms of the jurisdictional question, again, I got in this late. I did inquire as to whether the jurisdictional question had been answered and was erroneously told it had been. I think the last time I looked at that preceded the Supreme Court's decision on that, and I remember these cases years ago used to come to the court before the...
Actually, the main decisions on this question were in the 1970s. The most recent important one is in 1991. I believe those dates precede the appeal.
Absolutely, Ron. I'm saying the last time I looked was the Title VII cases that would come to this court, and the district court would continue to deal with the fees issue.
Indeed, that's exactly the point. The Supreme Court has said that there is a big distinction between attorney's fees that are provided by statute and attorney's fees that are damages under the contract. Attorney's fees provided by statute can be appealed separately from the merits. When the attorney's fees are provided by contract, then there's only one appeal, and it has to cover both the merits and the fees. That rule has been the law for a very long time, and everybody in this case has ignored it.
Conceded, Your Honor, and it seems to make all the sense in the world.
I don't know whether it makes all the sense in the world, but I do know that it's the decision of the Supreme Court, and we're an inferior court, so there we are.
So we have it. In terms of whether or not there was properly an award under the contract language, since it appears we won't re-argue this in the subsequent consolidated appeal, the language of the fee-shifting provision of the contract says all litigation costs and expenses and employees' reasonable attorney's fees necessarily incurred in the litigation shall be awarded to the employee. There's no requirement that the fees be incurred by the employee, and that's the distinction, and that's the issue before the court. The appellants want to impose the additional requirement that the incurring of the fees be incurred by the employee. Rather, this allows for the recovery even where an employee lays off the liability on a third party. At the very worst, it's ambiguous and it can be read both ways, and the district court was well within its discretion in determining that, given that Cintas wrote this contract, two interpretations, a reasonable one is these fees need not be incurred by the employee. They simply need to be related to the defense of the employee and, in fact, incurred. That's all I have. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. DiNardo. Anything further, Mr. Noble?
At a minimum, there's a factual dispute over whether Mr. Peary retained and used confidential information. There was a question about whether this information was disclosed in the course of discovery. It was not. Mr. Peary admits he found the disks and the tenured report in March of 2004. The first day of the injunction hearing was in April of 2004, at which time Cintas received this anonymous call from an Aramark employee saying this information was sitting on Mr. Peary's secretary's desk.
Is there any live dispute about whether he has any more confidential information in his possession now?
We are not aware of him having any written information. Certainly we contend.
No, it's not the question I asked. The question is there a dispute? That is, are we in a position where Cintas says he hasn't come clean yet and Peary says he has?
No, Your Honor. So that information was not produced until May of 2004 after the magistrate ordered Mr. Peary to do so, and there was extensive discovery on that issue, how Mr. Peary discovered that information, who he gave it to, and so on. And the issue of attorney's fees, Ohio law is clear under the Shuttleworth decision that fees paid by third parties are not incurred by an employee such as Mr. Peary. These fees were contractually paid by Aramark. There is no obligation that Mr. Peary reimburse Aramark for the fees, so therefore Mr. Peary did not incur these fees. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you, Mr. Noble. And I want to say to both counsel how important it will be to appellate jurisdiction to have the notice of appeal suitably amended. And once that notice is amended, you can look for us to issue a briefing order that will specify what issues remain to be briefed there so that we can bring this case to a resolution. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.